could women be the demographic saviour of Japan's economy? Nearly 49% of Japanese women, around 28 million of them, are now in the workforce. But the improvements that were desired by the current government have not been achieved. Leo Lewis is a Tokyo correspondent for the Financial Times. I spoke with him earlier.
Good morning.
The initial targets set by Shinzo Abe were pretty ambitious in the context of things. He wanted to reach 30% of management positions by 2020, but he's really had to pull back from that. 2 years ago, he cut it to 15% for the private sector, 7% for the government sector. He's also extended the deadline. Does that mean Japan's given up on this idea?
Well, I think it's difficult to say given up. But everyone has realised that the momentum that we saw in the very early stages of this, let's say 5 years ago when the phrase womenomics really first started hitting the headlines, that momentum has certainly been lost. As you mentioned there at the beginning, you've got an ageing population and you've got a shrinking labour force. Japan politically doesn't really like having the discussion about immigration, although that is happening. And so the answer has been to find ways of deploying more of this underused part of the labour force. In those early stages, you saw women coming into the labour force through necessity because Japan needed them, the economy needed them. And now what you're seeing is as you start getting more serious targets about using female labour force in managerial positions and in more senior political positions, that's when you're starting to see the kind of underlying resistance really starting to make its mark.
So how does womenomics fit into Abenomics? What his broader economic objectives?
Well, 5 years ago when Abenomics started being coined as a phrase, womenomics went hand in glove with that. And a lot of that was because he, Shinzo Abe, had realized that the demographics were going to be a following wind for this. But, I mean, if you look at some of the analysis that had been done on womenomics, it was a phrase that was coined by Kathy Matsui, who's a strategist at Goldman Sachs here in Japan. I mean, she has at some point said that full female empowerment could add 15% to Japanese GDP. It's a serious set of ambitions, and you can exactly see where the gaps are. There's no company in the Nikkei 225 index of largest Japanese companies that has a female CEO. And I think if you start looking at redressing some of that, you could see the obvious benefits.
We know that there are now more jobs in Japan than there are workers available to fill them. How much of this problem is due to the structures of the economy and how much of it is cultural?
That is a pair of questions that Japan itself is finding rather difficult to answer. I mean, as you begin to talk about the structural issues, one of them, for example, is that Japan has not historically made very good provision at all for women returning to the labour force after they've had children, which is why you see a lot of the return to the labour force coming in the form of non-permanent contract work and non-regular employment. And so there are two things going on there. One is that companies are not really set up for that. The expectations within companies are that women will leave when they become pregnant, that they won't come back to exactly the same job that they had before. The place won't be sort of held in the way that it is in other economies. At the same time, the actual provision for childcare, for example, has been extremely inadequate. Near where I live in Tokyo, there's a park where increasing parts of the land are being taken up with childcare facilities. There is a lack of land in busy places like Tokyo for that kind of activity. There's a lack of people to work in them. And so it's a slow process. And culturally, you've got a lot of built-in expectations about what women will do. And those are going to take some breaking down. And it is proving more than what one prime minister can do.
Japan has dropped to 114th out of 144 countries in global gender equality rankings. It sits behind countries like India, Azerbaijan, and Guatemala. What was shocking in preparing for this conversation is to read about the way in which the tax system in Japan disincentivizes women who are married from being in the workforce. Can you just explain the way the tax policies sit and effectively discourage one partner from earning anywhere near the other?
That's right. That there are significant tax advantages to having, effectively the female part of a couple not working, because if the job that she would go out and get comes at a certain level, which is not terribly advantageous to the family, then the tax benefit is better if she doesn't work. And that has been so much a part of the calculation. You've now definitely got a generation of women entering the workforce in their early 20s, say, who have watched their mothers not working precisely because of that tax disincentive. Japan needs to create a generation of women who will buck that system that just expects them not to work or not to return to their jobs after they've had children or to return to lesser jobs after they've had children.
And you've written about female executives refusing to declare the Womenomics project a failure. What, in your view, has stopped them from pointing out the challenges and the flaws in design?
Well, I think they are even more aware than most of the flaws. And I think that they certainly keep very, very close attention to all the little failures and all the little setbacks without just speaking exactly for them. I think that what is happening is that they have seen that even if it is disappointing, the momentum now is better than it has ever been. For one thing, you know, the vocabulary of Womenomics itself has given scope for women to demand more from their employers. They can cite Womenomics as a political movement as much as an economic movement when they are in negotiations about, for example, maternity leave. And I think that there is a view amongst, you know, its strongest proponents, its longest standing proponents, that what you do not want to do is to declare it a failure, because then that is exactly what will happen.
Leo Lewis, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
That's Leo Lewis there, Tokyo correspondent for the Financial Times.